The new Starz series, Marianne George, starring Julianne Moore and Nicholas Galitzine, tells a story almost too outrageous to be true, but it shockingly is. With nothing to her name and looking to elevate her social standing, Mary Villers sets her handsome and charming son, George, on the path to seduce King James I and become his all-powerful lover. This show is full of wit, scandal, action. You will not be able to look away. I know, because I couldn't. Watch the season premiere of Mary and George now, only on Starz and the Starz app.
Ready? Let's go. Give me a vacation.
Vacation!
Give me a golf course.
70 courses!
Let's get a water sport.
Paddleboarding!
Can I get excursions?
Whale watching!
Time for chill vibes.
Beach yoga!
How about a garden tour?
Balboa Park!
Give me a dolphin. What's that spell?
San Diego!
If you're happy and you know it, San Diego is the place to show it. Book your trip at sandiego.org. Funded in part with the City of San Diego Tourism Marketing District Assessment Funds.
This is your moment, your time to shine, your comeback. You're ready for the next step in your career, and you want an education employers respect. So you're not just going back to school. You're coming back with Purdue Global. Backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected public universities, Purdue Global is built for people who bring their life experience into the online classroom. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Hi, everyone. It's Sophia. Welcome to Work in Progress. Okay, let's be honest. Today, my inner teenager is losing her mind because truly one of my musical idols has come on the show, and I'm going to try to keep it cool and not tell her about like singing aggressively along to every single one of her songs in the shower through all of my emo teenage years. Jewel is here with us today. Having sold more than 30 million albums, opened for Bob Dylan, traveled the world singing songs that moved all of us, which she expressed felt more like prayers than necessarily choruses written. She is just someone who I think has always encouraged us to feel and to see each other. It's no surprise that her illustrious career has also led her to becoming a mental health advocate. Through her platform, Inner World, she makes sure that people who don't have access to traditional therapy have access to the tools that can reduce anxiety and suicidal ideation. She does all of this while writing thousands of songs, parenting her young son, and being one of the most inspiring and thoughtful people I've ever had the pleasure of having a conversation with. And she's here today not only to talk about mental health, but the 25th anniversary of her album, Spirit. It was her sophomore record, and thanks to a very special fan, she has unearthed some rare recordings and is doing a re-release of the record with songs we've never heard, some new songs, and some of our favorites all rolled into one incredible album. Let's speak to Jewel about how she manages to do it all. Enjoy. I'm just so thrilled to have you on the show today. And I really want to do something with you that I like to do with a lot of people who join me, because so many people tuning in to listen to you know you as this incredible recording artist and a thought leader and an advocate and all of these big, beautiful things that you are, you know, as a woman in the world. And I'm always really curious, if you look back in hindsight, you know, at your life and career, if you look at yourself at, you know, 8 or 9 years old, like little girl, Jewel, do you see sort of threads of the same human? Were you always creative and artful? Do you feel like, yeah, who do you feel like she was as a little girl?
Who was I at eight? Is that what you mean?
Yeah.
Let's see. Eight was a big year for me. It was the year my mom left. My parents got divorced, started living with my dad. My dad, you know, had a lot of trauma, but we didn't know it. So we'd been this Mormon family up to then, very like family home evening and kind of very Leave It to Beaver, maybe even in Anchorage, Alaska. And then we moved to Homer. My mom left. My dad started drinking, smoking, being physically abusive. My dad and I started bar singing as a living. So it was a really radical life shift. So I just remember being like a really huge shift in my life. What was I like? I was very observant, very watchful. And I'd say that's very consistent about who I am and what I'm like now. I'd say a lot of the things I began learning definitely started at that age. And I can definitely pinpoint several realizations I had at that age that stick with me to this day.
Wow. I have asked, I think, 200 people that question and didn't have the realization that your answer just gave to me until you said it, which is, I was like, oh my God, it's so weird that, like, of all the years I could ask you about, why, I wonder why it would have been that one. And then I think my inner 8-year-old was like, you went through family trauma at 8 too. Maybe that's why you ask everyone what they were doing at 8. And I was like, oh my God,
whoa.
I can't wait to tell my therapist about this. that's wild. And that, I mean, that level of a shift at that age, I just imagine to be so, so formative.
Trauma at any age, I guess, is, right? It definitely causes us to search. And there's some, you know, great things that come of it. There's some things that I can think back on during that time of my life that were really helpful, that were really good realizations. And then other things, of course, just coping mechanisms, assumptions you make about yourself, your worth, and those types of things, which take years of unwinding.
Yes, of course. And those assumptions and those connect the dots that our tiny brains tend to create or make, that as you develop in age, you go, oh, I see how I told that story, and I see how it just wasn't quite right.
Yeah, we have we're little kids making up stories about why our needs aren't getting met or are getting met. But it's fascinating. Yeah, it's a fascinating study.
Wow. When you talk about how you and your dad started to perform together in that stage of life, was there music present in your house before this big shift? Was music a constant through line, or did it come into your life as a result of that shift in your family dynamic?
Music was a constant. My parents had shows for tourists in hotels, and so it was like a family variety show. At like the cruise ships would, get off in Anchorage and then come to the hotel. And this dinner show would happen where my mom and dad put on a show. There was a film about my grandfather and grandmother who helped settle Alaska. And so my dad was part of this original pioneering family in Alaska. But all my aunts and uncles sang, all of my cousins singing was really developed because of my grandmother. She had been an aspiring opera singer and a poetess. And she left those dreams behind to escape Germany during the Second World War and taught all of her kids to sing and write. So I had a really artistic family.
That's an incredible family legacy. And
yeah.
And as you got older, I mean, I remember, gosh, it's crazy to think that we're talking about this 25-year anniversary of the record, and you've done this beautiful reissue and there's all these new songs on it. I'm like, oh my God, 25 years ago. Yeah, that is when I was like in my real emo feelings, like singing along when it premiered in my room. I remember even then as a teenager, reading about your stories and hearing the way you spoke about making art when I was still trying to figure out if that was something I was going to do. And I remember being so struck then about you talking about experiencing a period of homelessness as a teen, because thinking about it and going like, what would I do? How would I make it through that? Like, would me or any of my friends, you know, be so capable? Would we be able to create something beautiful out of something hard? Looking back on that now, what do you recall from that period? Because I remember reading that, you know, you turned down this big record deal during that time. And I think, like, when I was a teenager, I couldn't believe the wherewithal and the drive that you had. And now as a 41-year-old woman, I'm like, girl, how did you do any of that? What is it like to kind of reflect on that, during this anniversary moment?
Yeah. Life gives us so many good things along with the bad. You know, I was raised in this pioneer state where there weren't gender roles. I was raised on a ranch where there weren't gender roles. My aunts shoed their own horses and built their own log cabins. I wasn't taught to work differently because I was a girl. I was expected to figure things out and get things done. And so even though I had a lot of things going against me, you know, like abusive household and those things, that was a really good thing going for me. I didn't know that I was lesser because I was a female. And part of my natural resources, you know, we develop negative coping mechanisms, but sometimes I think there's something else called brilliant resilience. We tap into parts of our nature that are an innate gift to us. Part of one of my innate gifts was I was very independent. I just was. I was the kid that didn't mind not being at the sleepover or, you know, just doing my own thing or sitting quiet. That just, so when I wanted to move out at 15, that felt better. Taking on, you know, rent and trying to pay rent and trying to take on jobs felt better to me than staying in a house with my dad, who wasn't nice to me. And so that was that independent thing that really worked for me. And then being raised in Alaska as well and around nature, nature doesn't lie. If you know how nature works, you know how physics works. And so there's no shortcut. You know, hardwood grows slowly, takes a long time. Softwood grows quickly, falls over. So you kind of put all this together. I turned down having sex with a boss when I was 18. That's how I became homeless. Got discovered at the end of that year. And when I was offered this big record signing bonus, it just, nobody's given anything for free. I just know that. I just knew that because of how I was raised. It's not free money. It's not a free $1 million, but nobody was telling me what it cost me either. And so I had to educate myself. What is the cost of this free $1 million? And is that a cost I want to pay? And it turns out that wasn't a cost I wanted to pay. It would have leveraged me. It would have meant I had to have a really successful album, which nobody can force a successful album. So that's ridiculous and a lot of pressure to put on yourself, which wasn't pressure I wanted. And then when I learned how the contracts worked, the math was just, I'd have to sell so many albums to repay it. It was a loan. Yeah. And that's just not what I wanted. I wanted a career. And so my motto was hardwood grows slowly. And so I had to make sure that I was building and I was advocating for myself and that I was building something that would protect art and protect me to have what I actually wanted, which was a long-term career.
I mean, it's mind-blowing. First of all, hardwood grows slowly is such a good motto. And brilliant resilience, I think... You know, I came of age like sneaking home from school a little early every day to watch Oprah. And I just think about like when Oprah is like, somebody tweet it. I'm like that, like those phrases belong on like bumper stickers and refrigerator magnets. Like I want to look at it every day like an affirmation. But to think about the fact that you had the wherewithal to pause and analyze so young and in such a difficult moment in your life when, you know, I mean, $1 million contract sounds like such a life raft. How did you begin to analyze what that really meant? Because you're right. Nobody gives anything away for free. The trade-offs, as you learned them, weren't worth it. But did you have people to go to or were you trying to do research, you know, by looking things up? Like, how did you even make sense of this huge world of, you know, the industry that stands up the art we make? Because the industry is not particularly gentle or artistic. It is a banking situation. But But it's fascinating to me that you figured that out at 18.
Yeah, I think, again, it's just a gift of growing up in bars. You learn to be street smart. You learn to, nothing's what it seems. You learn to trust your gut and trust your instincts. Mm-hmm. You learn to rely on yourself. You learn there are no shortcuts and nothing's for free. So you just kind of start to really learn those lessons. I'm also dyslexic, and I think that as hard as it was and as stupid as I thought I was most of my life because I didn't do well in school and lots of other reasons, it made me really good at patterns in a way that I didn't know to appreciate until much, much later. Like, looking back, it's some part of how my brain works. Like, when I was 8, because you were asking about 8, I was in these bars. I was really sad, right? Mom left, abusive dad suddenly. Like, my life changed so much. And as I started singing in these bar rooms, what I noticed is we all had something in common. We were all in pain and nobody talked about it. Mm. I was in a world of pain that was so acute to me. It was so, I was so aware of the pain I was in. And then I looked around and I was like, wait a minute, I have a front row seat to watching other people in pain. And I'm watching people drink, do drugs, get in these crazy volatile relationships, anger, addiction, just a lot of different ways. And then you watch it play out and you're like, I remember writing down in my notebook, nobody outruns pain. Nobody outruns it. Like, why aren't we taught what to do with it? And so I knew it became my job to learn what to do with pain. And that was a question I put in my book. What do I do with pain? And so then I had heard about the buffalo goes into the heart of the storm. It's the quickest way is through. And that really hit me as a universal truth. The quickest way is through, move toward my pain. And so the tool I had at my disposal was writing. I liked writing. I journaled. And so I used writing to move toward my pain. And so I just think it's little things like that you start to pick up of like, I want to handle my pain directly. I can't avoid it by doing drugs or numbing out. You still have to deal with your pain. The quickest way is through. And you start to kind of piece things like that together on top of a lot of street smarts, you know, on top of just having to advocate for myself. It was the perfect training ground to hit the record industry because it is a tough business. This is a tough business and it's full of tough people, but I grew up around biker bars and, you know, all kinds of things. And so I felt like it was the perfect training. I felt very lucky to have received that training and, you know, and to have made it.
And now a word from our sponsors that I really enjoy, and I think you will too. The new Starz series, Mary and George, starring Julianne Moore and Nicholas Galitzine, tells a story almost too outrageous to be true, but it shockingly is. With nothing to her name and looking to elevate her social standing, Mary Villers sets her handsome and charming son, George, on the path to seduce King James I and become his all-powerful lover. This show is full of wit, scandal, action. You will not be able to look away. I know, because I couldn't. Watch the season premiere of Mary and George now, only on Starz and the Starz app.
Like many of us, you might think identity theft will never happen to you. But consider this. There's a new identity theft victim every 3 seconds in the U.S. That's over 15 million people by the end of this year, equal to the populations of New York, Los Angeles, and Chicago combined. Even worse, identity theft victims often don't even know they're victims. That's why LifeLock Identity Theft Protection alerts you to identity threats, even the ones that don't show up on a credit report, like data breaches, fraudulent bank transactions, loan and credit card applications, and crimes committed in your name. If your identity is stolen, your own dedicated LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will work to fix it. LifeLock protects you in ways that you simply can't on your own. Join now and save up to 25% your first year at LifeLock.com/iHeart. That's LifeLock.com/iHeart to save up to 25%. Identity theft protection starts here.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snagajob is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer? Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text snag to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
This is it, your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
It also really strikes me, you know, you just said you received training. What must have been your natural inclination toward being such a receptive and observational human being, even in a tiny little body, to go through those shifts you were going through and to be able to see the universal truth around you from such a young age, it strikes me as being so poetic, which feels like, well, duh, of course, that incredible lens for seeing, you know, what's underneath in such a poetic manner would serve you so beautifully as a writer. And I'm struck by this sort of like balance, this dichotomy that it seems like you've held for a long time growing up between, you know, the beauty and the reality of people's pain.
That was, yeah, an interesting thing for me in the 90s. You know, grunge was the big thing, which was great. Mm-hmm. You know, and when Nirvana came on, it was like a revelation. You know, until then, it was Madonna's world. It was, we're living in a material world, and I'm a material girl. And pop and, you know, Nirvana just came on and ripped scabs off the psyche and admitted we feel like And it was a revelation, and a whole generation felt like, yeah, I don't feel like a happy, shiny person. And that's beautiful. It's a really important part. You can only say I feel miserable for so long until you want to kill yourself.
Yeah.
And so then you have to ask yourself, now what? Now what? I'm in pain. Now what? I just happened to deal with that at such a young age. But by the time I was 18, my now what? I was already asking now what? And my music was about now what? Mm. But it wasn't out of naivete that I wrote I'm sensitive. You know, it wasn't out of naivete that I wrote the line, in the end, only kindness matters. It was from a very gritty, streety, street-informed. Mm-hmm. I knew the screaming blood of my own losses. I knew the screaming blood of the pain of the society I was in. And to choose to remain open, to choose to become more loving instead of more bitter is a real act of courage. It's a real act of power. But in the 90s, that was perceived as ignorant and Pollyanna. You know, I was ridiculed in the press. The press, which was, of course, very male-dominated, just tore me apart. And I always just thought how they would call me naive. And I just remember thinking how sheltered and naive they were. They knew nothing of the choices I had to make to be the human that I was at that age. And that me choosing to live and me choosing to be kind was the most formidable act of rebellion that they'd ever seen. And they didn't even know enough to know what it was.
Mm. And that sort of male domination and the larger patriarchy we we have all been steeped in for so many generations, the dominance of it misses the mark of the amount of evolving you had done at such a young age. Because when you talk about reaching that courageousness and it being the opposite of naivete, if you had been, I don't know, walking around like Gloria Steinem does today in the world, telling people what it is, they would have gone, what a wise woman. She's seen some things, but you were 18, you know, with a cherubic face and the voice of an angel, and they were going, oh, sweet little baby. and they were missing how far you'd come in such a short number of years.
And I could say it in the press. I could say it in interviews. I just think at the time there was such an inability for them to. I mean, I have a really specific view on it, right? Because I mean, it's my life. And yeah. But I saw a lot of, you know, bands that I didn't think had a tremendous amount of, how do I say it? I'm trying to think of a right way to articulate this. I watched a lot of people during the 90s get labeled as credible, and I saw mm-hmm. other people get labeled as sellouts, and it wasn't always accurate. Mm-hmm. You really kind of had to know what the motive was. You know, mm-hmm. how many times was I backstage watching male bands spend an hour making their hair look like they didn't do it?
Yeah.
And then walk out as if they didn't care when I just saw them care for 3 hours in hair and makeup and then yeah. act like they didn't. So it's kind of funny little hypocrisies. And for me, mm-hmm. in my own life and in my own body, all I was interested in is how do I continue to live and want to live? And that was my primary interest. That was my only yeah. interest. And luckily, I had the internet. So it really didn't matter what the critics thought. What really mattered is I was able to have direct access to people like you. I was able to have direct access and directly talk to people. And so I could tell them. They actually knew the thrust of where I was coming from. And that was amazing. Like, it was a miracle. My career started at the dawn of the internet. And that's the only reason I had a career, because it definitely would have been stopped.
Wow. That's so cool. It's interesting that this idea of what you got to see versus the sort of stories told by the press, I'm really fascinated by. I think, especially for women, they like to pigeonhole us wherever they can for whatever clicks they're going to get. And it's wild to see how, you know, even now, people going through the exact same things, some are lionized, some are demonized. You know, it's like, well, where are you useful to us? It's not about your truth at all. And I think, you know, we're seeing this moment where the internet is sort of cannibalizing itself, unfortunately. It's gotten so polarized. But still, you have the opportunity to cut through the noise if you just say, look, the truth is the truth. My experience is exactly what it is. You can feel however you want to feel about it, but this is my life. And for you to have been able to do that right at the sort of dawn of that age must have felt really empowering. Was it also scary?
Nobody can stop you from being yourself. You know, you can only be pigeonholed if you play along. Mm-hmm. Like for me, experimenting and changing my styles, that was considered a sellout. For me, if I mm-hmm. had just made pieces of you 0.2 and 0.3, that would have been a sellout. But only I knew that. That's just because of what I'm like. That's what I know about myself. And so, you know, if I was more afraid, I guess, of what people thought of me, I would have done something more consistent so that I would have been perceived as credible, but that would have been selling out. And so I'd rather not do that, even if it's perceived as the opposite, because I have to go to sleep with myself at night, you know? Mm-hmm. So nobody can stop you from doing what you know in your heart is right. And then you trust over the course of time that that plays out or it doesn't. And then you just make sure you're careful with your money and it doesn't matter. But I think that's the beauty of life all the time. That was the beauty of me telling my boss that I wouldn't have sex with them. Yeah. That was the beauty of him saying, I'm not going to give you your paycheck, and me saying, fine, I'll live in my car. Like, nobody can make you. You can't make me. You can't be leveraged if you refuse to be leveraged. You will pay a price. You know, I knew I was going to pay the price of getting kicked out of where I was living. Mm-hmm. And that wasn't a price I wanted to pay. But I knew the investment I was making was in my humanity. And I believed, mm-hmm. I've seen people sell out their humanity and I saw the price they paid. They never made it back. I thought I could make it out of living in my car.
That's a really special distinction to be able to make, because it is so scary to feel like you could lose everything to stand up for yourself. And I feel like when you talk about, you know, the grittiness of Alaska as a place, the grittiness of the way that you grew up, what you were taught, the way you weren't, you know, overly gendered young in your life, all of that adds to resilience, like you said. And, you know, even when you talk about the sort of wounds of life and the things you'd seen and going through abuse, when you talk about it in the context of watching nature, as a person who's only spent a week in Alaska, but it absolutely changed my life, I think it's the most magical place on earth. I was like, oh yeah, when you get really up close, you just see how it works. And it's brutal and it's beautiful. And it works as a system. It doesn't care about you as an individual.
Yeah.
And there is something, I think, something that must sort of stamp that kind of resilience on your soul from a really young age that I would imagine made you very formidable to so many people, including the boss that you rejected.
I feel so lucky I had the type of childhood I had in Alaska. Mm. If I had been abused and neglected, and I had periods of it in urban environments, but I had so much time in big nature that it was a medicine. It parented me. It taught me how the world worked. It taught me how to be a human. It taught me that nothing lasts forever, that everything changes. So even my depression would have to change. I was part of nature. I was part of physics. It taught me so many lessons that I don't know if I could have overcome without it. It definitely, and then, you know, I was raised in a barn. I was raised with no electricity. I was raised with an outhouse. So living in my car, you know, a boss threatens me and I'm like, I have to live in my car in San Diego. Ooh, you know, it definitely was like a real, and I do have to say too, like when I was homeless, I learned how to be happy. I learned how to stop shoplifting. I learned how to get a grip on my panic attacks. I learned how to get a grip on my agoraphobia. When you can do that inside your own body by yourself, it makes you so powerful. Mm-hmm. And so that was another reason that when labels came to see me and they were like, we'll make you rich and famous, I was like, that actually sounds dangerous for somebody with my background. I just started to get some relief in my body from some really awful things. I wouldn't trade it. You know, it made me... that my internal life was so real that the false reality of what, and then the real danger, God forbid somebody with my background gets famous. That is the bad ending of every movie you've seen, of every biopic about every musician. Like my life story should end very badly. And I knew it. And so I just constantly had to be like, how am I going to not let this story end up badly? And that's up to me.
Yeah. Yeah. That sort of agency. And again, that really special perspective that you have. I even wonder in the context of what we know now, you know, you talked about what you went through with your boss, what it led to, you know, living in your car, which you managed to really get the marrow out of the experience. Like I think about, I know I mentioned this earlier to you, but my therapist, who's one of my favorite people on the planet, is a cognitive behavioral specialist. And I'm like, he is going to love this episode because so much of what you're talking about is learning to be sort of your own rudder inside of the discomfort. And it strikes me in the context of the way we talk and the way we've all connected now, you know, even in 2017, Me Too, you know, breaking into this nationwide and global conversation, you had talked about your Me Too experience so long before. And it seemed like nobody really wanted to hear it. Nobody wanted to take anybody seriously before they were really forced to. And even now, I don't know how much they're really being forced to. But when people wouldn't listen to you then, were there tools you relied on? Or was it that sort of trust, that internal compass that you had that you'd fortified that really let you stand in that truth and in your power during that experience?
The press, you know, I would tell people what happened in the press, and then what would get written was that spunky gal lived in her car to pursue her dreams. And you're like, oh, right. How did that get turned into that? But you don't live for the permission of people. It is what it is. I think the reason I felt powerful at that time, why I always was a good negotiator in contracts, was because I knew you couldn't leverage me. I didn't want money more than I wanted happiness. I didn't want fame more than I wanted peace. You can't leverage someone like that. It's, you know, if somebody knows they can live with nothing, what are you going to do? What are you going to threaten them with? You know, you can only leverage yourself by your insecurity, right? Our insecurity leverages us. Our wounds leverage us. Mm-hmm. And so the more we can heal, the more we can invest in our humanity, the more we can advocate for ourselves, even if nobody else is, it doesn't take other people seeing it or applauding it, because that's a trust you build in yourself, the trust you build in your body through time. And it was also a shit show. You know, I'm 50 here talking about a long time ago in my life. And so it sounds quite tidy. It was frightening and scary and messy and all kinds of things, you know, but you just keep putting one foot in front of the other and saying, you know, that guiding principle that guides you, it's really good to know what those are. And for some reason, I was very interested in, and what I actually ended up developing during that year of homelessness was DBT and CBT tools for myself. Mm-hmm. I developed behavioral tools because I realized my behavior was driving my life, right? Like my shoplifting was going to get me arrested. My panic attacks were causing it to where I couldn't leave my street corner or get out of my car to go get food. And so how could I change those behaviors, and how could I make those behaviors practicable so that I could see results? I had to see changes in my life. It couldn't just be a theory. I had to actually get results. And so again, when you start to develop those kinds of tools and you start to like get those kinds of results for yourself, it just, again, it made me value. And what I did like for my record career, I decided to sign that contract because I made myself a promise that was this North Star guiding principle of my number one job is to learn how to be happy. I knew I didn't know how. I wanted to know if it was a learnable skill. Was it a teachable skill? It wasn't ever taught in my family history. So I had to learn a new emotional language. You know, the language I was taught emotionally led to misery, abuse, and addiction. So I didn't learn a new emotional language. There was no college. So I had to put that together. My number two job was to be a musician. And under musician, I wanted to be an artist more than I wanted to be famous. And so with those guiding principles, I let myself sign that contract. And I'm really proud. I am very proud to be, I'm 49. Really proud to be 49, and I've never let those promises down. And it wasn't perfect, and it's been messy, and it's been wildly messy.
Yeah.
But I've always made every decision trying to live up to those two goals. And those goals are enough to, again, help the trajectory. It gets you there in the long run. It's some of this in the meantime, but you end up over here.
And now a word from our wonderful sponsors. The new Star series, Marian George, starring Julianne Moore and Nicholas Galitzine, tells a story almost too outrageous to be true, but it shockingly is. With nothing to her name and looking to elevate her social standing, Mary Villers sets her handsome and charming son, George, on the path to seduce King James I and become his all-powerful lover. This show is full of wit, scandal, action. You will not be able to look away. I know, because I couldn't. Watch the season premiere of Mary and George now, only on Stars and the Stars app.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer? Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text snag to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
This is it, your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Refinancing your car at Kemba Financial Credit Union can get you quick access to cash to help manage high-rate debts and expenses. Get up to $500 next day cash back, plus no payments for 90 days, and take cash equity out. Make your car work for you and drive away with extra cash. Apply at Kemba.org. Restrictions apply. Offer ends April 30th, 2024. Federally insured by NCUA.
I appreciate the way that you can talk about how it feels tidy now because you've done all of the work. You can speak from a perspective and then remind folks listening that in the midst of it, it is a storm. It is a mess. That's what our life is. But I do think that, you know, at least for me, the sort of specialness of learning things and going through hard things and experiencing hardship is that then years later in hindsight, you can sit around with people and lean in about what this has taught us, how it's made us more human, what little nuggets we might be able to offer other people to make their current, you know, mess in the storm, like 8% less messy. What a gift that could be if possible.
Yeah, these little, you know, for me, like deciding I was going to put my happiness above every other single thing in my life. My life changed. That's enough to change the trajectory of your life.
I love that.
If you make every decision based on that, does this add to my happiness? I don't mean like excitement. I don't mean perks. I don't mean like I'm going to get the car to like make myself happy. I don't mean that. I mean, am I substantially doing better as a human? Do I have higher levels? Like, is my satisfaction rating higher or is it not? Can I audit that about myself? How do I quantify it? If you can ask yourself those questions, it's going to change your life. But when I made excuses of why I couldn't be happy, and, you know, I work with kids a lot. We do a lot of work with kids with suicidal ideation, self-harm, anxiety disorders. And something I talk a lot about is when we stop making excuses, we get healthier. And excuses are different than reasons. So like I had a lot of reasons why I couldn't be happy, right? I had a lot of reasons. You can point to a lot of things in my life and go, yeah, I see why I'm not happy. Was I willing to let that be an excuse though? Or did the buck stop with me? Was I willing to be accountable for my happiness? For me, it was realizing like nobody's coming for me. Nobody owes me anything. What do I owe myself?
Yes.
Am I coming for me? Am I going to stop making excuses for why I can't be happy? I know I have a lot of reasons to not be, but am I going to make excuses for it anymore? I'm an adult. Now what? You know?
Yeah. And so how does that fit in setting those sort of two all important rules for yourself? How does that fit in the journey? You know, you said no to the first deal and then obviously another opportunity came along and that felt better. And you know, you did make this incredible debut record that took all of us and the world by storm. How did that happen? What was that moment sort of like? And how did you know that it was the right thing to do?
Yeah, so I had turned down a record deal maybe when I was 16. It was creepy, pervy. I don't even know if it was going to be a real record deal. It just smelled wrong. So who knows what that was. But went to school. And then when I was 18 and homeless, got discovered, turned down $1 million signing bonus, took a big back end, set about trying to make hardwood grow slowly. Folk record at the height of grunge. I did 1,000 shows a year at least.
Wow.
I did 5 and 6 shows a day, so maybe 1,200 shows a year easily.
God.
2 cities a day. It's not cute. You know, I turned down The Real World was a huge reality. The first reality show, I think, maybe. And I remember my label coming to me. I hadn't made my record yet. And they were like, you're not going to believe it. There's this show. You live in a house with other people and there's cameras in the house and they film you 24/7 and we could watch you go from being homeless to making your album so that by the time you launch your album, you'll be a household name. And they really wanted me to do it, but that wasn't Hardwood Grows Slowly. That wasn't my motto. So it's like, I was just loyal to my motto, as dumb as it is. And, you know, everybody screaming at me saying you're ruining your chance at a huge deal here. But it supported fame over artistry and it supported quick growth over slow growth. And so I turned it down based on that, as silly as that sounds. And then my album failed for a really long time. And I did 6 shows a day. I did shows at 9 a.m. I opened for goth bands. I did shows at midnight. I drove myself everywhere in a rental car. I didn't spend any money. So I couldn't rack up a big debt from the label. So I couldn't get dropped. You Were Meant For Me failed. Who Will Save Your Soul failed. You Were Meant For Me failed again. I started making a second album because it failed so hard. And then Bob Dylan took me out on tour with him and he really believed in me. And I was like, you know what? If Bob Dylan's the only one that likes me, fuck it.
Yeah.
Like, and he was
You're
like,
doing pretty great when
go
Bob Dylan
back
gives
to
you
that
the stamp.
Album. Don't give up. Stay solo acoustic. And it just kind of gave me a courage to go into year two of failing. Exhausted, you know, I've done thousands of shows at this point and it started to take off. And then it took off. And once it did, it started selling like 1 million albums a month for over a year. It was insane.
Whoa.
So you get to Spirit, the album I'm re-releasing right now. And it was like, ooh, sophomore slump. How will she do it? And you're like, wow, what a terrible thing to tell somebody. I didn't even know that term existed, but thanks for putting that in my mind.
Yeah, thanks for giving me an anxiety dish for dinner.
Yeah. And then I was like, wait a minute. I can perceive this one of two ways. Like, this can be the most pressure because I had this huge success. Or I'd made a really good record contract and I'm rich. And I don't ever have to make a penny again if I don't spend it. And I know I don't have to spend money. I know I can live simply. And that will buy me the fact that I don't have to have this pressure on me. I get to do whatever the F I want. Again, I still get to do whatever the F I want. And so that's where you just put all the voices for me out of my head. Don't think about what's happening at radio. Don't think about what You Were Meant For Me sounded like. And I wrote Hands, which sounded completely different. It was a very simple plea. In the end, only kindness matters. And if I could tell the world one thing, it'd be that we're okay. I mean, it's a prayer. It's such a strange song to write, but it's what was in my heart. And I didn't care if it was a hit or not. And that gives you so much liberty.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. When you aren't worried about making people like something, but instead you want to do what feels right to you. I was reading an article this week about Andre 3000's new album. And he's just like, look, I don't know what to say to anybody anymore. I want to play the flute. And I was like, this is the coolest thing I've seen anybody do in a long time. And I think artists like him, artists like you, who, you know, you've experienced like the biggest universe of success possible in music and art making. And you still stay true to the thing that feels good in your chest and coming out of your mouth. Like, that is hugely profound, I would imagine, in your own experience. But I will say, as a person who loves music and makes a different kind of art, it's so moving for me to watch. It's a great reminder to not get caught up in all of the things that people try to put on us that aren't ours.
Yeah. Yeah, I made an album, last year, I guess, I put it out, called Freewheeling Woman. And it's the first album I've written from scratch. I've always had thousands of songs. So even like for a pop album, I didn't have to write a pop album. I just had at least 100 pop songs in my catalog, or country songs, or whatever genre I wanted. But I wanted this to be who I was at that age, 47 or something, when I was writing it. And it was a trip, because you know a song should have a chorus coming in at 30 seconds. Just dumb shit you shouldn't know. It doesn't help art. And not having a lot of female singer-songwriter role models, we don't see many of us make it. We've seen Madonna and Cher, but we just haven't seen like Joni Mitchell and those women come through these phases in our life, through mothering, through writing through these phases. And quite frankly, we don't see many songwriters writing well past their 20s in general, male or female. And so it was a really interesting thing for me to like get this album from scratch, out of the ground of my being, of who I was now. And it felt so empowering. And it was also the most difficult thing I'd ever done, because I had to really face insecurity. I had to face former sounds and versions of myself. I had to find a way of sounding free in my body again. And only I could tell when that was happening. It was a total trip.
Wow, that's so cool. I guess I never thought about, like, in my brain, I'm seeing it like you have this huge Dropbox of like Dropboxes, just folders and folders everywhere of like thousands of songs. And to have to, or I guess want to, from the place you are in this moment, create something all new and not have any of those thousands of folders influence it, that's got to be a real trip.
It was. It was really an interesting thing, because I wanted to do it as a woman. I wanted to do it as a full-grown woman. I wanted to do it as a mom. I wanted to do it as a woman that lived through a divorce. I wanted to do it as a woman whose society says, you quit having value. I wanted to do it as a woman that felt powerful for who and what I was now, and not what I often saw women do in my career, which was still try to wear whatever, act like you're young and not talk about your child and not talk about birth and all of these things. And so it was a really interesting and really cool. I mean, I think I wrote 200 songs to get the 12 that I liked finally.
Wow, that's incredible. And it sounds to me like what you're talking about is really from this place of full embodiment. You know, I'm going through my own version of this story, not with a kid involved, but people will sort of check in and be like, whoa, divorce and this and that, and how are you doing? And it's not that it's easy. It's that I've never felt more embodied in my life. I've never known myself this well. I've never been in this much integrity or this mentally healthy. And if I had to do it all again and make the mistakes I've made to get here, okay. And I don't know, I get to do this thing where I ask questions and I get to put these stories into characters when I film on a, you know, stage somewhere. But this idea for you as a songwriter, that you get to take all of that and tinker and make and write, and it's 200 to get to 12. I'm so fascinated and like enamored by the whole journey that you're describing. It's so inspiring.
Yeah, I relate to what you're saying about, you know, a divorce. It isn't fun at all. But when you can realize I've made a mistake, my life isn't the shape I need it to be.
Yes.
The shape that I've purposefully built is making me feel like a prisoner inside of it. I'm dying of unhappiness inside the shape I built.
Yes.
I have to burn it down. It's powerful. It's an act of courage. And again, it's not like I'm just recommending. I don't suggest everybody go get divorced. I don't think it's something to aspire to. But if you find yourself in that position and you find yourself with a match and you have the choice of burning your own life down to the ground and starting over, which is heartbreaking and full of grief, but because you believe in a vision of what you can feel like in your body, and how to do it differently with humility, without bitterness, without hostility, and just because you know that that's waiting for you in life still, it's a powerful thing.
Yeah. I think it's full of grief and grace. You know, for me, I love the way that you phrase it. I I had this conversation. I had an incredible group of women all going through splits. You know, started in the spring. We collected more and more of us through the summer. For whatever reason, this year, they're calling this the summer of the great divorce. It's like, okay, something's in the water. But I remember saying at one point, I said, you know, I built this beautiful house, but I built a house for someone else. This isn't my house. This isn't for me. And that's not easy to admit, but I think
it's better than not admitting it.
Yes. It's better than living trapped in a beautiful prison.
Yeah.
When you think about all this perspective and this new place that you made this new record from, in the same season as you're having this re-release of Spirit after 25 years, what does it kind of feel like to hold this beautiful history and all this newness at the same time? Is it like a trip to be on the seesaw, or does it actually feel like you've just gotten to a place where you can hold space for all of it?
It feels like continuity. People scratched their heads, you know, my whole career at what I was. I didn't fit any tidy boxes and took a lot of punishment for it, just in the media. I quit at the height of my fame. I was told that was really shameful, but it was because I couldn't psychologically handle the level of fame I had achieved. It didn't make me happy. I hated it. I hated needing bodyguards. I hated all the death threats. I hated not being able to grocery shop. And I had to give myself permission to go, I know I really worked hard for this, but it doesn't work. And again, being treated so viciously, there wasn't anything like a mental health break, or those words didn't, I was saying them, you know, I was saying, I can't psychologically process and live with the level of fame I have. It's bad for me. It's bad for my psyche. Those things just don't translate the same way as the Me Too stuff just didn't translate. Switching genres for me was authenticity. It was always perceived as me being a sellout or things like that. So for me, it's really fun to defend my humanity, to defend what I knew was right in my heart, to make the choices I knew were right. Even though I was often the only one doing it, it's a lonely thing. And then you put on top of like all the other crap that went down during my life, it's fun to be here now. It's fun to be 49. It's fun to see Gen Z caring about what they care about, because I care about it. I fought for that. I fought that fight. I'm here for that. Yeah. I love where culture and kids are grappling with, because that was the integrity and that was the fight I was in my whole life. Mm-hmm. So I like it. I like knowing what I did with Hands and Spirit and why I made that album, who it is and what it says about me now, and how that continuity's always been there. But it took this long for it to kind of play out.
And now a word from our sponsors. The new Starz series, Marianne George, starring Julianne Moore and Nicholas Galitzine, tells a story almost too outrageous to be true, but it shockingly is. With nothing to her name and looking to elevate her social standing, Mary Villers sets her handsome and charming son, George, on the path to seduce King James I and become his all-powerful lover. This show is full of wit, scandal, action. You will not be able to look away. I know, because I couldn't. Watch the season premiere of Mary and George now, only on Starz and the Starz app.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position: warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
This is it, your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Refinancing your car at Kemba Financial Credit Union can get you quick access to cash to help manage high-rate debts and expenses. Get up to $500 next day cash back, plus no payments for 90 days, and take cash equity out. Make your car work for you and drive away with extra cash. Apply at Kemba.org. Restrictions apply. Offer ends April 30th, 2024. Federally insured by NCUA.
You touched on this earlier, but it feels like the energy of it is in this moment as well with your art, that you've used your art to be such a strong advocate for mental health and for these conversations around awareness, especially with young kids. I think it's so beautiful, the work you do, the conversations that you promote with them. And I know that this is the second year that you've done your Not Alone challenge. And I would just love to tell the folks at home listening to this a little bit about it and, you know, what it is, how you started it, how they can get involved if they're so inclined.
Yeah, about 22 years ago, my partner, business partner, and I started a youth foundation around mental health, again, when nobody was talking about it. We have one of the highest success rates now in the world of helping kids with suicidal ideation and anxiety disorders. And we do it without traditional therapy. Not that I'm against it. I'm all for it. But not everybody has access to it. Yeah. And that's unacceptable to me. And there's too many DBT and CBT skills that are teachable in group settings that get tremendous results.
Yeah.
That are free and scalable if we can figure out how to do that. So that's what we do in the foundation. The Not Alone Challenge is a huge campaign. It's a social media challenge, hashtag Not Alone Challenge. We have celebrities, CEOs, athletes of all types talking about mental health, why it matters to them, and then donating an auction item. There are incredible, insane auction items that you can bid on. And then there's also just like swag you can buy, like a sweatshirt or things like that, that all raises money to make sure that we can put tools into the hands of people that are living in what I call mental health deserts. People that have access to technology or a cell phone, maybe, but not access to a therapist. And so how can we put tools in their hands? Right now, we have 500,000, a shortage of 500,000 therapists in America. We think that if everybody were to seek help that needed it, we'd about 5 million therapists short. It's a real problem. Wow. We have to figure out what to do with mental health in a different way. And the Not Alone Challenge and the other company I started, Inner World, are really about solving that.
Yeah, that's so special. I mean, I think, to your point, figuring out what skills are teachable and really life-changing. I mean, for me, figuring out how to begin to manage my anxiety, like, has absolutely changed my life. And, you know, I count myself as very lucky working in an industry like the one that we all work in so often to have healthcare because I'm a union worker. But so many people in our country just don't have that. And I think to tackle and knock down these barriers to care is like one of the coolest things I see people do. And so I just personally, and I'm sure on behalf of everybody at home listening to you talk today, I just want to say thanks. It's a big, beautiful mission that you made yours. And I'm really inspired.
Yeah, Inner World is is centered around DBT and CBT skills in group settings taught by lay people. So it isn't a therapist teaching it. You're in a virtual environment with like 30 other people. It's anonymous, and there's a trained guide that we train, but in skills. And so just as you know, because you have a CBT, you know, specialist, you learn these skills. So like if I was to describe them to, you know, your audience, it'd be like, we have a lot of people with social anxiety or agoraphobia. They don't leave their homes. Mm-hmm. And so we say, what's your goal? To go grocery shopping. What's your worst case scenario? What's your worst fear if you go grocery shopping? And they write that down and they say it out loud, maybe to the whole group. It's 30 people, all anonymous. Then you say, all right, if that happens, God forbid your worst case scenario happens, what's your plan? You make a plan. Who will you call? What will you do? Step-by-step plan. And you say, all right, what's the best case scenario? And then they write that down. And then you say, we don't get to control the outcome, but if we could influence it, what could we do to influence the best thing happening? And so armed with that type of tool that you can practice and then have these really behavioral-based tools, you know, we're actually able to publish two papers showing we're as effective as traditional therapy. And it's all virtual. It's all anonymous. It's pretty cool.
That's so neat. That is so cool. What an amazing thing to just wrap your arms around and say, we can do this. And, you know, I know I was thinking about that sort of visualization of you like holding this whole new project and this 25-year anniversary project. And then I think about your arms holding this, you know, cause-based project. And it's like you've managed to wrap your care around so many things, you know, for others and for yourself. And
I think it all stems from, you know, my job never changed from when I was 8. What do I do with pain? Why is anybody talking about it? And I've just been loyal to that. I've been loyal to what do I do with pain? And songs are how I dealt with pain. It was my medicine. Turned out to be medicine for other people, which was such an honor. You know, I got to have a career based on authenticity, based on my medicine. Like, that's profound for me. It's been such a gift. And then to have a second career now based on the exact same thing, it was the same. My music is a side effect of learning what to do with pain. My skills and my tools are just a side effect of me saying, what do I do with pain? How do I want to live? And so it's really, it hasn't been having to like wrap my arms around something enormous. It's been trying to solve a problem for myself and realizing in doing so, you solve a problem for someone else.
That's beautiful. So from this perspective, you know, this moment where you're able to look at all of these things, what feels like moving forward in your life? What feels like your work in progress currently or perhaps on the road ahead?
I think scaling up Inner World, I think that's where we can make the biggest impact at the most affordable cost. You know, it's a freemium product. It's free or as little as $8 a month for a premium product. So it's, you know, keeping really scientifically proven, we're a clinical research platform that's scalable. Like, that's where all my mental energy is like, how can I create scalable, scientifically proven solutions? Artistically, I'm working on a visual art piece that I'm really excited about. I'll do an art installation in the spring of next year that'll have an album around it that is really turning me on at the moment and puts a huge smile on my face.
That's so cool. Well, we look forward to it. I know we're all really excited for this re-release of Spirit. I know I can only imagine how many people are listening to this, going to Google Inner World, and I can't wait to see what comes in the spring of 24.
Thanks. Yeah, really appreciate it. On the re-release, I have this guy named Alan that, like, ever since the mid-90s, I would lose songs and he would be like, I would get on the internet and be like, I lost a song called Jessica. Does anybody have a bootleg? And the same guy always got back to me. So I ended up hiring him like in the mid-90s. And so he put this album together. It has like hundreds, depending on which like version of this album you get of this reissue, it has like hundreds of like crazy bootlegs, demos, outtakes from the studio sessions. It's very Alan's world. Because I forgot, I don't even know I had any of this in the vault. So it's just Alan's special brain that put all this together.
That is so cool. We love Alan. Thank God for him.
Yep.
Yeah. Amazing. Well, this has really just been such a joy. And, you know, thank you for coming to talk about the whole spectrum of art and humanity today. I'm very grateful.
Thanks. It was really nice talking with you.
The new Starz series Marian George, starring Julianne Moore and Nicholas Galitzine, tells a story almost too outrageous to be true, but it shockingly is. With nothing to her name and looking to elevate her social standing, Mary Villers sets her handsome and charming son George on the path to seduce King James I and become his all-powerful lover. This show is full of wit, scandal, action. You will not be able to look away. I know, because I couldn't. Watch the season premiere of Mary and George now, only on Starz and the Starz app.
Refinancing your car at Kemba Financial Credit Union can get you quick access to cash to help manage high-rate debts and expenses. Get up to $500 next day cash back, plus no payments for 90 days, and take cash equity out. Make your car work for you and drive away with extra cash. Apply at Kemba.org. Restrictions apply. Offer ends April 30th, 2024. Federally insured by NCUA.
This message comes from Viking, committed to exploring the world in comfort. Journey through the heart of Europe on an elegant Viking longship with thoughtful service, destination-focused dining, and cultural enrichment on board and on shore. And every Viking voyage is all-inclusive, with no children and no casinos. Discover more at Viking.com.
Hey guys, back at the playground again, huh?
Yep. You know what this playground could use? A wine country.
Heck yeah, and some waves so we could go surfing.
Oh, yeah. Ah, love that.
A redwood forest would be cool.
I'm in.
Ah, ski slopes.
Let's do it.
Can a girl go shopping?
Yeah, baby.
Wait. Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.